It's more than just a story from Big Y.
Hi, my name is Scott Thibodeau, produce sales manager at Big Y Foods. Our relationships that we have with our farmers definitely sets us apart from everybody else. Because we have those local relationships, you know, we're able to procure the product from the local farms in our area, the freshest product that they have, and that's very important to us.
It's about building relationships. It's more than food. It's my Big Y.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network. I welcome my colleague and friend, Professor Richard Epstein. He teaches law at the University of Chicago and NYU. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, where he writes on defining ideas, a revelation of Richard in his youth. That is right. We're going to get into a time machine with Richard and go to the spring of 1963, Columbia College. JFK's in the White House. The world has not changed with the assassination. Lyndon Johnson is an afterthought. Civil rights is all aflame across America. Richard is in a class taught by Hal Chase, Professor Hal Chase, who's a peripatetic professor. He's a war hero. Richard doesn't know that at the time, but he's twice wounded on Iwo Jima. He will die at 60 of a heart attack, but right now he's in the bloom. He's teaching Richard about a law, a part of law, that involves Justice Brennan. This is about something that Richard's written about his whole life, takings. The idea that government does not have the right to take, to possess private property, that a man's home is not only his castle, trespass is a serious transgression in English common law. Professor, take us to the spring of 1963, what you heard that day that changed your life. Good evening to you.
Okay, well, what happened is Hal Chase taught a course in the Supreme Court, and it wasn't about takings laws as such, but now that I found out that he was a war hero, which I didn't know at the time, what he did is he invited those members of our class who wanted to go down to Washington to watch the Supreme Court in action to come. So, and as an added fillip, he said afterwards we could meet with Justice Brennan, who at that time was about 57 or so years old and very much in his prime. And so dutifully I went along with everybody else, and I sat there listening to the kinds of arguments that started to take place. And one of the arguments seemed to involve the question about whether labor unions could get themselves on private land. And so some lawyer gets up there and he starts arguing. And what he says is he makes some point about that the actions in question were a common law trespass. And then sure enough, what does he do? Justice Brennan looks down from the dax and says, well, what difference does that make? And I looked at myself and said, what, trespass? Doesn't make any difference? Well, it turned out that when I studied labor all the years later, Justice Brennan was absolutely right. There were a whole line of cases that said once you get into a collective bargaining system, the employer does not keep the common law property right to exclude others. If you're forced to bargain with people and forced to give them jobs against your will because you can only turn them down in good faith, well, how could you tell them, I'm going to enter into a contract, and part of the terms of this contract is your workers are not allowed to enter into my plant? That would obviously be a bad faith negotiation. So Justice Brennan was right. But the issue about the clash between the labor laws on the one hand and the takings clause on the other was carefully removed from view at that particular point in time. But it's certainly been much more urgent to everybody, and most recently in a case before the Supreme Court.
Yes, let's go to that case. Cedar Point Nursery versus Hasid argued the oral arguments have taken place. And if I understand it, reading Richard provides links in his defining ideas piece. What happened in California, that's important, was the United Farm Workers organizing group with bullhorns entered a place of work at 6 a.m. in order to corral or invite or embrace workers to organize the workers. And the question is, did they have the right to trespass, to come into that property without permission? And if I understand, Richard, the 1975 California Agriculture Labor Relations Act seems to indicate they did have that authority. Do I read that correctly?
Yes, within limits. The caveat is what the statute did was to take the same framework that you had for the National Labor Relations Act, which, of course, in several important federal cases, indicated that the workers' ability to combine for mutual advantage meant that they could meet on the employer's property if they didn't inconvenience the work. And then there's a later case involving Babcock and Wilcox, which said that union organizers could come on the plant under somewhat more restrictive conditions so that there was no absolute barrier to trespass. When you get to California, what they did is the National Labor Relations Act did not cover agricultural workers, so California passed a statute which was allowed to do covering them, and by and large adopt the same scheme that you have with the National Labor Relations Act. And so what happens is they then, pursuant to the statute, issued regulations, and the regulations basically stipulated that there were a certain number of days that you had, say 30 days, and you could come on the plant for 4 hours a day, say 120 day hours a year. And so the question is whether or not when you authorize those things, does that insulate you from the trespass? This case, like every case, has an extra element in it, because here you could argue the case on very narrow grounds and say, yes, they were allowed to come in, but they weren't allowed to disrupt. So even with the statutory authorization, they were still in violation because they exceeded its limits. And so you could read this case in one of two ways. Do you really want to face the conflict between the trespass laws on the one hand and the labor union laws on the other hand? Or do you want to say that this is a case in which the union didn't play fair under the applicable rules, and so they should have been sanctioned anyhow without getting to the larger question?
Richard, I thought was taking me to the Fifth Amendment, nor shall private property be taken. However, no, he was taking me much farther back to 1765, to a case that I've now looked up, thanks to Richard, Entick versus Carrington. And this seems absolute, Richard. By the laws of England, every invasion of private property, be it ever so minute, is a trespass. No man can set his foot upon my ground without my license, but he is liable to an action, though the damage be nothing. Richard, that's unambiguous in English.
It is unambiguous, but it's also slightly wrong. So there's a charm to this. That is, every time you but it's a charm that is very instructive. The rule about whether or not you can enter into somebody else's land has been calibrated quite deliberately to say that you do not have to have damages. And that was also the rule in other kinds of cases. But you may have justifications to enter the land which weren't involved in that particular case. So I'll give you two. One of them is, suppose there's a dispute of the boundary with two boundary line between two parties. Generally speaking, one party is entitled to go on the land of another, at least with the sheriff's order, in order for the very limited purpose of trying to take a survey to figure out where the boundary is. And so there's a strict necessity to do this, because otherwise you can't get the evidence to make out your case. And the other strict necessity that was commonly allowed at the time is if a public road is completely blocked by snow, let us say, and you can trespass upon somebody else's property to get around those obstacles, you're allowed to do so under the doctrine of necessity. And if the infringement is relatively small, there's no compensation that's given. Rather, it's assumed that everybody in the long run will benefit from that kind of a situation. But Entick v. Carrington was none of those cases, as there was rumor of a seditious rival. Libel, and what the king's messengers did, they came in and they ransacked the joint. And what the judges had to do was to say whether or not you could issue a, quote, general warrant. That is, here's a warrant saying we think this guy is suspect. We want to be able to search the whole place out. And what the court said is, not only we got the basic rule of trespass, and we are going to allow warrants to overcome it, but they're not going to be able to overcome it by just simply saying we're looking for something here. And so, in effect, when you get to the United States Constitution, you get two prohibitions that have to be linked together, one which talks about unreasonable searches and seizures, and the other which says no warrant shall issue except upon probable cause, particularly describing the places to be searched and the things to be found, right? And so the general warrants were out. But what happens is the basic law of property was accurately stated in that case, widely assumed everywhere else. Because if you cannot exclude people who want to come on their property as of right, then what does it mean to say that property is private? And so the unions cannot possibly bring themselves into the surveying case. They certainly weren't trying to cover out an official function. So what happens is there's a case called Loretto, which said very nicely, if you have a permanent physical occupation of somebody else's case, even if you're a private party, that's a taking, so long as the government has authorized it. But interestingly enough, the world's a very strange place. That rule has never applied to rent control cases, where people enter property on a short-term lease, and then they remain for years afterwards under federal rules or state rules, and it turns out that's quote-unquote not a taking. And so what's happened is the takings law develops in very strange ways, and the doctrines about exclusivity were only developed around 1960. 1979 in a case called Kaiser Aetna, and 1982 called Loretto, but the rent control statutes were sustained on other grounds as early as 1920. And so what you do is you get these things that they don't develop in synchronic ways. They don't get the chronology right, and so the doctrines get all sorts of funny situations, all sorts of contradictions, and then you come to the Supreme Court and you dump it in the lap of these guys and dolls, all these people up there, and they have to decide what they're going to do with this unholy mess, and that's why the oral argument was so dramatic.
I'm speaking to Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, writing about a case that is argued before the Supreme Court. It will be decided eventually. However, this is all also about the history of private property. So when we come back, Richard teaches me there was before the New Deal, and then there was after the New Deal. And we're going to start before the New Deal in 1908 and 1915 with two cases that seem to establish that the states do not have the power to force an employer to negotiate collectively. Before the New Deal. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show on CBS Audio Network.
It's more than just a story from Big Y.
Hi, my name is Scott Thibodeau, produce sales manager at Big Y Foods. Our relationships that we have with our farmers definitely sets us apart from everybody else. Because we have those local relationships, you know, we're able to procure the product from the local farms in our area, the freshest product that they have, and that's very important to us.
It's about building relationships. It's more than food. It's my Big Y.
Spectrum Mobile is reinventing wireless again. Get unlimited on 2-plus lines for $29.99 a month per line. No contracts, no added taxes or fees. Includes nationwide 5G. Save up to 60% with Spectrum Mobile. Get unlimited on 2-plus lines for $29.99 a month. Call 855-438-2999 or visit a store near you. Offer valid for new customers on 2-plus unlimited lines. Spectrum Internet required. Savings based on 2-line comparison of unlimited plans among major national carriers as of 9/20/21. Prepaid excluded. Restrictions apply.